Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. It started as Decoration Day, a day to honor fallen Civil War soldiers, and has evolved into Memorial Day, a time to honor all of our dead. We'll talk about what our departed dead mean to us, how we memorialize them, and what Memorial Day means to us, including Memorial Day traditions. We want you to tell us about your traditions and about your family members. We're going to be talking about many of those traditions and honor, especially those who have served our country. Later in this program, we'll be talking with folklorist Carol Edison. We'll talk about the craftsmanship and artistry found in many grave markers and what grave sites mean to us. We'll talk with Curtis Tyrrell, who's CEO of AppTime and is with the Billion Graves Project. We'll tell you how you can help genealogy by photographing those grave markers as you're out there this Memorial Day weekend. Randy Williams with the Veterans History Project will join us. We'll talk with several veterans, John B. Martin from Preston, Gerald Cannon from Northern Utah. We'll also be talking with Steve Weaver, who's an Afghanistan vet, and Ray Church, World War II vet. And we begin the program with Warren Hegg, National Supervisor for the Keep the Spirit of 45 Alive Project. Warren Hegg, it's great to welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
I've been reading a bit about this. Tell us what the Keep the Spirit of 45 Alive Project is.
Well, 2 years ago, Congress unanimously voted in support of a new national day of remembrance to honor the men and women of what are typically called our America's greatest generation. And they indicated that that would be on the second Sunday in every August, to line up with August 14th, 1945, the anniversary of the day that President Truman announced to the country and to the world that World War II was over. And it was arguably the greatest day for the greatest generation. So the what we're doing is trying to promote public awareness so that people actually observe this new day in various ways around the country.
And you had some activities, I think, last week, and there's going to be some activity this coming weekend, Memorial Day weekend. And some of this involves Utah. And I wonder, first of all, I think some of us are aware of this. There is a family in Thatcher, Utah, the Borgstrom family, that lost four sons during World War II and became somewhat famous at the time.
Yes. To raise consciousness about this August date, the second Sunday in August, obviously one begins with reminding people of the enormous sacrifice of the families and the individuals during World War II when more than 400,000 Americans lost their lives in service to their country. And Utah, of course, is renowned for seriously considering the issue of family. And so in each state, we had this image, if you will, of the Spirit of 45 campaign, which is the homecoming, the greatest iconic photo of the Times Square kiss, where the sailor and the nurse are there in that embrace on the day that the war ended. But to remind people that there were many who did not come home, the tourists in each state, trying to find if you will, kind of an emblematic or a family that represents the Gold Stars, which we call the Gold Star families of the era. And clearly the Borgstrom family, having lost four sons, I believe that there was one in the Army, two in the Air Corps, and one in the Marine Corps, all who lost their lives in 1944 within months of each other. It was an incredible sacrifice on the part of that family. And we wanted to draw attention to that because too often Memorial Day, the significance of Memorial Day is lost in the midst of holiday sales and other kinds of activities. So we actually went out and found the photographs of the four boys and brought them to the Salt Lake City Gold Star Mothers section of the cemetery and had a little service on their behalf prior to Memorial Day. And those photos are being taken to Washington, D.C., where they'll be presented on the steps of the National Archives, and then they'll be carried by youth, about 400 youth that will be marching in the Memorial Day parade up to the National World War II Memorial, where they will honor their memory by laying flowers in a wreath there in front of the wall of gold stars that represent the 400,000-plus who made the ultimate sacrifice during World War II.
I don't know if you know the rest of the story. I don't. Were there surviving Borgstrom children, sons?
I believe there were. There were six. They had seven children. I'm sorry, they had a total of 10 children in all, Alban and Gunda Borgstrom. They had seven boys, Six of them graduated from Bear River High School in Garland, Utah. And one of the sons actually died of a sort of an unrelated illness, a ruptured appendix. But all five of the brothers enlisted or were drafted into the military. And as I said, the Elmer Borgstrom died on June 22nd, 1944. He was in the Army. One died in March of 44. He was a Marine. I believe he may have died in Guadalcanal. The two of them were in the Army Air Corps and died in 1944 in August. So it's a rather, it's a rather tragic story, but at the same time, it's a rather powerful example and a reminder of the kind of sacrifice that our country requires from time to time or asks of families, even today, when the war, of course, is much smaller. My son served in both Afghanistan and Iraq and lost three of his men in the Iraq invasion, and therefore that burden still falls very heavily on a more limited number of families. But we did want to draw attention to this as we were passing through the country on the way to the Memorial Day program.
And there's still many Gold Star families, right? One of the it was a Gold Star mother that was featured in the Utah events of last week, Colleen Parkin, whose son, Marine Corporal Matthew Reed Smith, died serving his country in 2005. Just an example, many Gold Star families still.
Absolutely, and that was why we invited Mrs. Parkin to be there. Her son, she lost her son, as you know, in a more recent conflict, and the whole idea behind the National Spirit of 45 Day effort is to remind people that that these sacrifices, the ones that in World War II, there was also a homecoming that was greatly appreciated by the veterans and their families after World War II. Today, that feeling of unity and that feeling of bringing these folks home safely and to look after their needs when they return, because they've been out there serving for us all. And particularly always remember that there's always going to be an empty chair in the Parkins family where their young man might have been sitting on special days like this. And we simply wanted to draw attention to that is the true meaning of Spirit of 45 in our country. We should be thinking about the spirit of 2045, mm-hmm. In terms of what kind of a society and how do we honor people who make make such a commitment to us, regardless of what people's politics are. One should always respect the fact that we have young men and women who are willing literally to lay down their lives for the rest of us in our name. And that is something deeply worthy of respect, regardless of the the winds of change or the politics of the day, I think.
What do these ceremonies mean, then? Does this help us? Obviously, it helps to remember those who have given the sacrifice and have died. What do these ceremonies mean to you?
Well, personally to me, I am a World War II baby boomer. My father never really fully recovered from the war experience. He himself was in the Navy in the Pacific for 4 years in the war and lost his little brother in the Battle of Okinawa in the final days of the war in 1945. So for our family, we've always known the significance and the impact that has had on people down through the years. I think it's a powerful moment to reflect on, have we earned it? In other words, as a community, have we earned the right to ask young people to do these things? Are we the society that's worthy of their sacrifice? And I think that is, more than anything, the way that these kinds of moments should be considered. A piece of stone in a cemetery with a name on it or something inscribed on a memorial hardly does justice to the human quality and the human issues here. That's why we constantly try to bring forward the actual faces of these people, the names, what their story is. I know that you're going to be talking to Veterans History Project. We helped originate that in 2000 when the Congress did get that moving. But we've always been trying to get the human element, the face of these people when they were young, and they put so much at risk for the rest of us. So I think it's really just trying to revive a sense of contemplation. Everything is so fast moving in today's world. Everything is point and click, and it's digital, and it's gone. We're trying to say, well, that's probably an important technological development, but the core needs of people to be connected and to care about something meaningful that is a part of the human experience is something that's timeless, and we're hoping that these kinds of ceremonies help remind us of some of these things. I also want to mention that right there in Utah, you have companies that are dedicated to the preservation of family memory. As you know, Ancestry.com originated from Utah, as did this new company, Full 3, which looks specifically at the families with people in military service. Well, they've used the power of technology in a way in which you definitely personalize these stories. And I think that's a wonderful development, because there's a case where the digital age does not diminish or coarsen in any way that human element.
A little later on, we're going to be talking about how best to preserve some stories. Memorial Day is a great time. You're going to maybe be with Grandpa, who served in the war. What would your suggestion be? How best to preserve those memories?
Well, again, I think there are so many occasions throughout the year. From our point of view, again, we're looking at a whole generation that lived through an era that Life magazine called the hinge of history. And in 1945, in August, America turned from the work of war, if you will, to the work of peace. It was arguably one of the greatest moments in the history of our country. And so we often suggest that maybe on Memorial Day is a time for reflection and considering those who made the ultimate sacrifice, and honor the families and honor the memory of those people. And I think that's number one priority for a Memorial Day consideration. There is Veterans Day, of course, in November, when we honor those who are in active duty and those who have served down through the years. We have over 45 parades across the country where young people actually carry these photos of their local World War II veterans, men and women who served. They carry them in their parade, and they make a personal statement. In New York, hundreds of kids do this, and they actually commit to 100 hours of service to their community in the name of the veteran that they're marching for. But on National Spirit of 45 Day in August, it's really about community. It's about coming together and reminding ourselves that we are stronger as a group than we ever are as standalone individuals, that everyone has a sense of common duty, which is the underlying meaning of community, and that the World War II generation, in a sense, really wrote the book and set the gold standard for coming together, for shared sacrifice, for courage, for commitment to others, commitment to service, and, of course, to a sense of national unity. And these are messages that really, I think, today resonate throughout the country when we're dealing, again, with some pretty historical changes. People can kind of draw some strength, if you will, from the idea that the children of today who are being told that they're facing a lot of future difficulties, they carry in them the same DNA as their grandparents, who had much tougher things on their life agenda. They dealt with them, and they left us with a very strong and healthy society, something that I think will continue to inspire us for generations to come.
I want to follow up on a comment you made earlier in our conversation. Probably others feel this way. It sounds like you feel that a day like Memorial Day, perhaps in some sense, needs reclaiming, that for perhaps many people, this is just another three-day weekend.
Well, I very much agree with that. I think that people now, it's fascinating, as the society ages, it's kind of interesting, as the boomers sort of come into their own as older people, they are becoming more reflective, and they're looking for roots. I think that, again, I mentioned Ancestry.com, the popularity of things like that, genealogy. People are saying, who are we? They want a little bit more significance of why we do the things we do. So hopefully Memorial Day will be restored to its true meaning, which is, again, to honor those who have been, it's almost a biblical thing, those who would be willing to make that ultimate sacrifice. No greater love have a person than to lay down their life for another. And so, yeah, I have a somewhat optimistic view that as the population ages, and with things like National Spirit of 45 and these kinds of things, that people will revisit some of these days and ask themselves, is this a day really for going out and getting something, a discount on a sale? Is it a good day for going to the beach? And sure it is. Of course it is. But then why was that possible? It's made possible because of the souls, the people that we are remembering on this day. It is their day. So perhaps we pause at some point, have a moment of silence, raise a glass of your appropriate beverage or whatever it might be, and simply acknowledge the fact that all of the things that we're enjoying have been paid for by people who perhaps may have given everything, gave their lives for us to have these kinds of things in our lives and for the world. So that's my take. I think that there is a need to restore some basic understandings. The things that have always made this a strong country is a willingness to go back to first cases and say, where do we stand on this? And I think something like Memorial Day has the power to be a very inspirational time, particularly in today's world.
Just a couple of minutes left. I think more information at spiritof45.org, right, and the 45 numerals. And I see in some of these materials that people are being invited to send in photos of World War II veterans and of couples who were together during the war years. Anything else you'd like people to do to participate in the project?
Absolutely. I think that what we're trying, each year we come up with some new ideas. This year some people suggested, listen, why don't we send in our photos? We're World War II veterans. And so Hewlett-Packard is creating a massive banner that's going to be displayed at the World War II Memorial on the second weekend in August that will contain the faces of 1,945 veterans from all over the country. And obviously we're looking for the young men that we just talked about, the Borgstrom brothers will be included. But we'd like to see some other Utah veterans from World War II included. But the one that really strikes a chord with me, as you know, the symbol of this project is that famous Times Square kiss, which shows what they were fighting for and the role of the women and the home front in this great story. So we've asked people who were together in the 40s, who might have become couples in the 40s, gotten married during and after the war, send in your wedding photo, send in the picture of the two of you together, have your kids send it in, and let's make a mural of these. And Hewlett-Packard, again, has offered to make a huge banner that will fall in Times Square on August 14th, which will be the anniversary of the actual kiss, celebrating those families. So 1,945 is the goal again, and we're even getting photos from people like Lauren Bacall, who married Mr. Bogart in 1945. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an exciting time for the families to be represented, because ultimately, again, this is a story about family. It's a story about community. So if anybody out in Utah, and I'm sure there are many, many families who have these photos, if they can get them into us and the instructions are there on the website, we would love to include them, because, as we say, Utah is a wonderful place to have this conversation.
So the website is spiritof45.org, spiritof45.org. We've been talking with Warren Hegg, National Supervisor for the Keep the Spirit of 45 Alive project. Mr. Hegg, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure and a very, very pleasant and rewarding Memorial Day to all the folks in Utah. And thank you for giving us this opportunity to share with you today.
And to you, too. Thank you. Coming up following a brief break, we are going to be talking with Randy Williams, who's on the USU campus. She's curator of the Fife Folklore Archives and has been involved with the Veterans History Project. We'll talk about that. And then we'll have a treat. We'll talk with four veterans, two World War II veterans, an Afghanistan vet, and a Vietnam War vet. That is coming up. And in our last segment, we'll be talking with folklorist Carol Edison about grave markers, artistry and craftsmanship, and what grave sites mean to us. We'll also be talking with a representative from the Billion Graves Project, an intriguing project where you can help with genealogy by just taking a photograph of your family's gravestones. All of that to come. We're asking for your input as well. What are your Memorial Day traditions? How do you honor your dead? What are your family traditions? You can call us at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or email us at upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. We'll be talking with some veterans following this brief break. Memorial Day is coming up, as you know. It's on Monday, and we thought we'd take an hour to talk about what it means to talk to some veterans, remember the sacrifice that so many have given. We have talked with a representative from Keep the Spirit of 45 Alive. That's a project honoring World War II veterans. We'd love to hear from you as well. What are your Memorial Day traditions? Tell us about your family members. How do you honor them? And the number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. Or you can email us at upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. Later in the hour, we'll also be talking with folklorist Carol Edison about grave markers, craftsmanship there, and what they mean to us. And a representative from the Billion Graves Project, an intriguing project you can help out with your genealogy by just taking a photograph of your a gravestone of your relatives when you're out and about. Let's bring in a caller. Kevin in Smithfield is with us. Let's see here. Okay. Let me. I'm not sure. I guess we've lost Kevin. Kevin, call back. 1-800-826-1495. 1-800-826-1495. Call back, Kevin. Or if you're not Kevin, call in with your traditions. 1-800-826-1495. We'll be talking with some veterans as well. Randy Williams, curator of the Fife Folklore Archives at Utah State University, joins us. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
And I understand you've been involved with the Veterans History Project and the Utah Love, this national project. Tell
Correct.
Us about this.
Well, the project started in 2000 through an act of Congress, as your previous caller mentioned, and we felt like that was an incredible opportunity for Utah State Special Collections and the Merrill Kazare Library to get involved in. And we were one of the first partners, and we actively, during that period of time, 2002, 2003, 2004, were going out and interviewing veterans. What a delightful opportunity that was. We trained folks, and so at times it might be, as you've been talking about, a grandchild interviewing a grandfather, or it might be a graduate student going and interviewing someone. And we have those deposited, and anyone can just do a search online, USU Veterans History Project, and see the robust collection that we have. They range from World War II, Korean conflict, Vietnam, and we do have a few of the more recent conflicts.
And we're best to go to just Google USU,
yes,
USU Veterans History Project.
Correct, and that will come up.
Let's go to a caller first, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Veterans History Project. And I imagine you could tell us a little bit how to get a conversation started with maybe a relative who's not a veteran or
exactly.
is a veteran. Let's go to Brett in St. George. Brett, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead with your question or comment.
I am a member of the Patriot Guard Riders, Southern Utah chapter, but that's a nationwide organization. It's a motorcycle club. Started in Kansas a few years back to combat the efforts of the Westboro Baptist Church, who tend to protest at veterans' funerals and soldiers' funerals as they're coming back. We do a variety of things, especially for Memorial Day, but year-round. When we're invited, we attend funerals for veterans of all wars. For Memorial Day, we do flags on graves. We're invited to, softball games between active military and groups to honor veterans, things like that. I know they've got a ride planned to New Mexico for a big gathering soon. I'm not a veteran myself. My father served for 4 years in the Pacific in World War II. Never completely got over that, but I'm very proud of the service he gave his country. Many of my fellow riders are veterans of both recent wars and past wars, and we just want to keep alive the it's like what your previous guest was talking about with the Spirit of 45 Project. We want to make sure that people remember, even if, in the case of a good friend of mine, Steve Cantonwine, and I hope I can do this without crying, he served tours in Vietnam. He was a drill sergeant, died from the effects of Agent Orange and cancer just recently, just last month. We don't want him to be forgotten, even if their service is well in the past. And so we go and we celebrate their sacrifice, and we try to honor those who have given what they've given, whether they died on the battlefield or died on the battlefield later on.
So
we try to honor them.
So important for them to be remembered. That's the impetus.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm interested. You go and I don't know. Do you confront the Westboro Baptist people? What happens when you?
I haven't. I'm a fairly new member. I can't speak for our ride captains or anything like that. I don't know what they've done. I know that, and we don't have a lot of that I know of in this part of the country that's gone on. But I do know that the impetus for our group, for Patriot Guard Riders, and if anybody's interested, it is a free organization. PatriotGuardRiders.org is where you'd go to find out. And you don't need to be a motorcycle rider or anything else. But the impetus for it was that some people wanted to stand up and combat the effect of these. Basically, what the Westboro Baptist Church does, for those listeners who may not know, is they will go to a soldier's funeral, and they have an agenda that's fairly homophobic, and that they're claiming that God is punishing the United States by killing our soldiers because we are allowing people the freedom to be homosexual or to live an alternative lifestyle. And that's just, they can have their opinion, but it's an awful place to do it, protesting at some family's funeral that's just lost their son or daughter. And so they would go and they would provide a barrier, a human barrier, basically, not confrontational, of course, between the protesters and the family. And sometimes if they got too loud, they'd start up the bikes and give them a little Harley-Davidson chorus to drown out the protests with their exhaust pipes and of that nature.
Interesting. Well, we really appreciate you telling your story. Thank you.
I appreciate
Thank
the
you,
opportunity to. Thank you so much. And
Thank
thanks
you.
For this program. It's a great, great service.
Thank you, Brett. Brett called in from St. George. You're welcome to call in as well. We'd love to hear your Memorial Day traditions. How do you honor your dead? And how do we preserve those stories? We're talking with Randy Williams with USU, curator of five folklore archives, and we're going to be talking to some veterans as well in this part of the program. Later on, Carol Edison, folklorist, talking about grave markers, and a representative from Billion Graves Project. And you can call and participate in the program at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. So, Randy, if you're wanting to, you know, maybe you're going to be with one of your family members, you want to preserve, as Brett said, you want to remember. That's the big impetus. How to get that conversation started?
Well, I think the first thing is that you want to remember, and so therefore you're curious. And curious people make great interviewers, especially if they're family members that have an interest in that person's life, and they want to know what their, whether it's wartime service or just their life experiences. And so, obviously, they're going to want to record that, so have some kind of device. And there's a lot out there. I mean, you could even record on your phone nowadays. Mm-hmm. But making sure that you have a quiet space where you and that individual or a few other people can be. Not everyone has a lovely room like we're in, but a place in the home that you can sit down quietly and visit. And if you may have jotted down a few questions. There are lots of places online. If you're a veteran, you can go to the Veterans History Project, which is a national organization through the Library of Congress, and get some delightful questions that they've prepared. But, you know, you can also just create your own, what you're curious about, and then sit down and start the interview. It maybe take an hour and a half, 2 hours, and it will be a really rewarding experience for both the person doing the interview and the interviewee.
And I'm imagining that when that person passes, you really wish that you had.
Exactly. That's, right.
This is the time to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that we hear oftentimes with family members that participate in oral history work is that they don't know some of these things about their veteran family members, that they've lived with them 20 and 30 and 40 years. And your last caller talked about his father, who never got over some of the World War II activities. And I think one of the great things about oral history, especially with the Veterans History Project, is it became more open out that folks were talking about, and people felt more inclined to participate in being interviewed.
Let's go to another caller, then we'll bring in our veterans. This is Virginia. Virginia, welcome to the program.
I grew up in Panguitch, little town in southern Utah, but my grandmother had two children that died, and they had buried them in Beaver. So my earliest memories are going with Grandma and my cousin over to Beaver and decorating the graves of those two little boys who had died. And even then, back in 1950, the Beaver Cemetery was very well kept. There were lawns and flowers. It was just a lovely situation. So that tradition has continued. Now I just turned 65, and we'll still be going over there this weekend to decorate the graves in Beaver.
Wonderful. So that's your tradition.
It is.
Yeah. This is a good way to remember.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing
that.
Appreciate that.
I know.
And let's bring in our panel of veterans now. We have Ray Church from Delta area. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Church. We have Steve Weaver, who's an Afghanistan vet. Steve, I'm not sure where you're from.
Pleasant Grove, Utah.
Pleasant Grove. All right. Thank you. And we have John B. Martin, who's calling in from Preston, Idaho. Thanks to all of you gentlemen. Let's start with Ray Church out there in Delta. You served in World War II.
Yes.
How old were you when you went in?
I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
About 20.
Where did you serve?
I served at the Guam veterans, when I got up there, I was a sergeant in the Marine Corps, and in Guam. That's a little down out in the South Pacific.
Yeah, so you must have seen some action if you were in the Marine Corps.
Yes, quite a bit.
And I understand you were a POW as well.
Yes, yes. I got captured. I got captured after about 3 or 4 or 5 days, I guess, of Guam. The invasion of Japanese from the island of Guam, and they took us prisoners, and there's only a few of us left on Guam, but the Japanese came in with pretty heavy invasion. They had a lot of invasion, a lot of people, a lot of Japanese soldiers, and when they came in, we of course formed a little circle, a little bit of defense, but it wasn't long before we were taken because they landed several thousand, and there's only about 100, maybe 110 Marines on the island of Guam.
How long were you a POW?
I got captured there.
Yeah.
On Guam, and the few of us that were left. Of course, the POWs.
Yeah.
All of them, but I mean, we had them pretty well stringed out already. A few of us left.
Yeah.
But yes, we were captured, and with the, I guess about there must have been about 75 men Guam Marines on Guam, but they landed 5,000 Japanese. So it wasn't long, you know, what long we were taking. We just didn't have the manpower.
Let's turn to John B. Martin, also served in World War II. Understand the European theater, and understand, Mr. Martin, you were a ball turret gunner. Flew missions over Europe. Mr. Martin, are you there? We'll try to bring him in a little later. Let's turn to Steve Weaver. You served in Afghanistan. When did you serve?
I served from 2010 to 2011, and the spring, so about a year-long deployment.
Mm-hmm. What sorts of things were you doing?
I was with the 934th Forward Surgical Team. So the goal is to be a surgery capability as forward deployed as you can in order to provide life-saving interventions for anyone who's wounded prior to actually trying to transport them up to a higher hospital. So I was in the ICU of the particular hospital, and that's the 20-man hospital, so you kind of do everything when you're there, but that was my primarily assigned role.
So I imagine you must have seen some disturbing things if you're serving in the ICU.
You do. Fortunately, the Army and the Department of Defense actually did a pretty good job of getting you a lot of stateside experience. So we spent a lot of time in Miami dealing with a lot of gunshot wounds, burn victims, things like that, car accidents. So prior to going over, I think the team overall felt pretty prepared as far as medical skills were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the cultural aspects that we hadn't anticipated were really kind of the more difficult things to deal with.
Now, having come home now and fairly recently, I don't know what you do on a Memorial Day, or a day like that. Do you remember fallen comrades? Are your traditions different having served in Afghanistan than before?
They're a lot more introspective, to say the least. When I was a kid, I used to go to different cemeteries and things like that with the family. That tradition's kind of faded away, but overall, just kind of a nice break. Go ahead and take, and you know, maybe catch up with some friends, Facebook,
How's the readjustment been like? I know that can be hard.
I was fairly fortunate in that I had a nursing license before I left, and that's what I did while I was overseas, and that's what I continue to do when I get home. So overall, the readjustment's been easier on that aspect for me than I know a lot of other people that kind of come back and no longer can use their skills as they've been doing for a whole year.
So. Mm-hmm. Do you have other vets talk to you? Is that the brotherhood there, or do you just kind of get on with your lives?
No, I still keep in contact. I'm fortunate that a number of the guys that I had to deploy with live and go to school at the University of Utah where I do. And so, I mean, I'm able to see them on a regular basis and, yeah, still hang out, stuff like that. But as far as other veterans from different eras and things like that, they're always very interested in as far as sharing their stories. So.
Hmm. Let's turn back to Mr. Church. Ray Church served in World War II, Pacific Theater, was a POW, and Marine. What does Memorial Day mean to you? What are your traditions? What are your thoughts on a Memorial Day?
It's quite a special day for me, I guess. We do try to remember some of the fellows that passed away. On Memorial Day, I really will not forget the men that I was with that didn't make it, and especially Memorial Day is the day we celebrate or we set aside because this is a special day, as you know, mm-hmm. And our company of Marines that were on the island that were not, we didn't have enough men to hold off the Japanese army. They had a large contingent of probably around 5,000 men that came in on the island, and we only had about 30, maybe 40 that withstood. And there were about 10 of those. 10 of the 40 was by themselves in the hospital there in Guam. Hmm. And so we didn't have very much to hold back. We did for a while, but it didn't take long until we were taken prisoners. Right.
Do you, have you told stories to your family? Do you talk about this with your family?
No, maybe some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's pretty typical of World War II veterans. Well, we appreciate you telling your story for us, Mr. Church.
Well, it was quite a sad time, but we're very proud of our men who did make it. Hmm. These fellows that just gave everything. They had a lot of men that would have had a few. So it seemed that it would be like we'd just be walking over, but it wasn't. We held them off for a while. Hmm. And you're talking about 30 to 1 and the numbers. And so I'm proud of those fellows very much. And the ones that made it, I'm proud of those fellows. Hmm. I see them once in a while. There's still a few of them left. Hmm. But they were proud of those gyres, we call them gyres, those Marines that stayed on the island and tried to hold off these Japanese.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Ray Church from Delta, served in World War II, and Steve Weaver, who's an Afghanistan vet from Pleasant Grove. Thanks, gentlemen, very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
We appreciate that. And thanks for your service. We're going to bring in now another World War II veteran, John B. Martin from Preston, Idaho. Mr. Martin, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I understand you were a ball turret gunner, served missions over Europe.
Yeah.
Must have been frightening, quite a frightening experience.
Well, sometimes, yes.
Yeah. Imagine you received fire quite a few times.
Yeah.
And you were a POW, shot down, POW?
I got shot down on my 17th mission.
Well, a 17th mission, so you flew 16 before that.
Right.
How long were you a POW?
Well, that was towards the end of the war, about a little over 2 months.
Yeah. And on those 17 missions, obviously that very memorable mission would have been that last one, but anything stand out to you from the previous 16?
Well, on our 10th mission, our co-pilot got killed and waist gunner got wounded, and we received quite a bit of damage to our plane on that mission.
Hmm.
Then they broke our crew up after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was flying with the crew I got shot down with was only their third mission, and I hardly knew any of them because they wasn't even living in the same barracks I was in.
Mm.
So that was, you know, kind of a bad deal.
Yeah. Do you talk about these experiences with your family?
Pardon?
Do you talk about your experiences with your family?
Well, some, not mm-hmm. too much.
Yeah. What do you do on Memorial Day? What does it mean to you?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
I was drafted into the Army, so, and I lucked out to get into the Air Force, I guess.
Yeah. How old were you?
I was 22.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was drafted. I spent my 24th birthday in the prison camp.
Wow.
Did you leave a family behind at home when you left?
Well, I had I was married, and I had one son. He was only a year old when I left.
How old was he when you came home?
Well, he was a little over two.
Hmm. I guess that's the experience a lot of people have had. Yeah.
Yeah.
The people that you leave behind. How was it picking up your life after the war?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't too bad, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for my dad, and then I, in the garage, and then I started right out there when I got back from the war, so
mm-hmm.
I didn't have any problems.
Yeah.
Work, you know.
Well, Mr. Martin, we really appreciate you talking about this with us.
Yeah.
John B. Martin, who lives in Preston, Idaho, he flew 17 missions. In the European theater, shot down on the 17th one, served, well, it was a POW for a time. We're going to hear from one more veteran, then we're going to bring in folklorist Carol Edison, talk about gravesites and their meaning, and we'll also be talking with Curtis Tyrrell from Billion Graves Project. Just before we go to our last interview, who's with Gerald Cannon, lives in northern Utah and served in the Vietnam War. Randy Williams, anything else you'd like to say about preserving these memories or the Veterans History Project?
Well, I think, you know, this is a great forum for discussion, especially we're talking about remembering Memorial Day, Decoration Day. And I think if folks are interested in capturing those stories from their family members, who better to do it than they that have such a vested interest and are curious and the connections are there and already made. And as I said, you know, a quiet room and a tape recorder or a video machine or a digital recorder would be great. But the long-term storage of that, and that's where an archive comes in, where you can, you know, connect with special collections at a university or in a town and try to deposit that material because I think we're all curious about the history of our nation, and it's told in these small little stories that help us, you know, inform the bigger story. And so the effort that individual families do help tell the bigger story. So I would recommend folks trying to, you know, record and transcribe and deposit it somewhere where other people, not only the family members can revisit, but also researchers throughout the country can have access.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to hear from Gerald Cannon next, and then a brief break, and then we'll come back with Carol Edison and with Curtis Tyrrell. That's coming up.
Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, enriching cultural, intellectual, and civic life by providing opportunities for all Utahns to explore life's most engaging questions and the wonders of the human experience.
Speaking with Colonel Jerry Cannon, Colonel, how do you observe Memorial Day?
Well, we're quite a military family. My father was in the Army. My father-in-law was in the Navy. I was in the Air Force. And we usually or always visit their graves and decorate their graves. Usually there's a flag on their graves already, and we take flowers. I display a large flag in my front yard. And we, you know, try to remember, you know, the veterans, and there are none of my personal friends that are buried in this area. They're in their local hometowns, and, of course, some were never returned. So, you know, it's kind of a mixed day, family and friends who were lost in Vietnam. And so we decorate their graves, and then usually we have a family picnic after to remember and enjoy one another's company and the joy of living in this wonderful country.
Now, I understand that you served 294 combat missions as a fighter pilot during three tours of duty in Southeast Asia. What does, if you could look back and think about Memorial Day before and after you served?
Well, it didn't. Of course, my dad was still alive before, and so, you know, we didn't visit military graves before, but family graves. So it was always a family kind of a thing. But Memorial Day now, after Vietnam and the experience of losing friends and losing a lot of people who were in the same situation that I was in, it totally changes Memorial Day into a, you know, quite a sad day, a day of remembrance of the people that I knew.
And with that, the people that you knew, you lost a number of friends, you indicated. How did that affect you?
Well, you know, it always made you recognize your mortality, if you will, and you're just thankful and blessed that you were, you know, were a survivor and you had a chance to serve this great country, and you saw how great it is in a situation like that. When you saw how bad it was for people in other parts of the world, it makes you more appreciative of what we have in this great country, and it just makes you love it more. And, of course, Memorial Day is the day of remembrance and appreciation. You know, and there were people who served, you know, on the front lines. We always used to say on the pointy end of the stick were the ones who were actually there in combat. But it takes them all. I never flew an airplane that someone didn't put gas in it and load the bombs on and put the bullets in it. And somebody, you know, had to do all of those things. You know, maybe they weren't, you know, on the front lines, but it takes everybody serving in their capacity. It's a joint operation, if you will, to get the job done, to put the ordnance on the target. So everyone should hold their head high about whatever service they performed in the defense of this country.
Patriotism truly is a group effort.
It is, yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Colonel Jerry Cannon, this morning.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
We're talking about Memorial Day. What do our departed dead mean to us? How do we memorialize them? And what is their sacrifice, their history mean to you? How do we preserve it? What are your Memorial Day traditions? Tell us about your family member and how what you do on Memorial Day. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-826-1495. We have about 10 minutes left in the program, 1-800-826-1495. Or you can email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. We're going to bring in folklorist Carol Edison, talk about grave markers, craftsmanship and artistry found there, and what grave sites mean to us. We'll also be talking with Curtis Tyrrell from the Billion Graves Project, very interesting project. You can participate with this at any time, but especially when you're out perhaps visiting the grave site of your loved one. First, let me get in this email. This is from Steve in Beaver Dam, Arizona. He says Tom mentioned that World War II veterans often did not share their wartime experiences when they returned home. My family's experience must be like that experienced by many of the millions of children of World War II veterans who were notoriously closed-mouthed about their experiences in the war. I'm lucky in that toward the end of his life, my father began to open up a little bit about it. What he revealed was a man completely unlike the one I thought I knew. At the end of the war, planes were being scrapped, and as a Navy pilot, he was charged with flying a decommissioned plane which had already been scrubbed of its identifying numbers to the boneyard. Realizing that he could thus not be identified en route, he flew the plane under the Golden Gate Bridge, which should have been cause for immediate court-martial. So Steve says, he goes on to say, these great men and women are part of a generation which is dying away now, and any memories they share are precious. Steve in Beaver Dam, thanks for that email. He emailed upraccess@gmail.com. You can as well. The number 1-800-826-1495. Let's bring in Carol Edison, folklorist in Salt Lake City area. To Carol Edison, thanks. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, how are you today?
Oh, doing very well. And we bring in Curtis Terrell as well, Billion Graves Project, CEO of Aptime. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, my pleasure.
First of all, tell us briefly what the Billion Graves Project is. This seems intriguing.
Yeah, BillionGraves.com is actually a project that ties the GPS and phone capacities of smartphones with cemeteries and allows volunteers to walk through and take a picture headstone by headstone, and we update the GPS location. Other volunteers come along afterward and transcribe that data, which means that now that headstone is actually searchable and findable in the location in the cemetery where it is.
And, of course, gravestones have important information for genealogists. Does this have to be an organized effort? Can I just go out to the graveyard and do this? How to participate?
Yeah, most often it's done as an individual who just has a fondness and an affection for those that have gone before and wants to make sure that for family history purposes, the content is available for research online, and this is one way to make that happen.
So you, first of all, I'd get the app.
Yeah, the app is available through either Apple iTunes Store or through the Android Play environment. It's for both of those smartphones, and once I have that installed, I can just go out and start running along grave by grave.
Now, do I have to get any other information? I just snap the photos, and then someone else comes along and...
Yeah, you can do both if you want.
Do both? Okay.
There's volunteers working on both sides of the process. Mm-hmm. Typically what we find is that somebody will go along and they'll take easily 200, 300, or 400 pictures and then upload those to the Billion Graves database. And there's a lot more volunteers waiting there just to be able to transcribe those so that the content is unsearchable. But you can certainly do your own images just as easily.
Where are you toward the goal?
Oh, quite a ways away. Billion is all. It's a pretty
big number. It's a lot. Yes.
It's entirely feasible, though. As we talk to people, they first look at us with some incredulity and just say this is impossible to do. But as we start mapping out the numbers of the people and the volunteers that are growing and participating, it becomes something that's quite easily possible. We've only been doing this for now. In fact, Memorial Day 2011 was when we first launched this. Hmm. So we're into this about a year. Hmm. It's going quite successfully, not just in Utah, but there are thousands of volunteers all around North America and in Europe that are taking pictures of headstones.
Tell us the website again.
It's billiongraves.com.
And that's the place to go. And this would be a great weekend, obviously, to help us toward that the Billion Graves. Let's bring in Carol Edison. Understand that you've studied grave markers and the craftsmanship that goes into some of these. Tell me a little bit about this.
Yes, I'm totally fascinated by it. There's a wealth of art as well as a wealth of history and information in graveyards, and sometimes we forget that. We get too focused on the history and the content, and we forget about the beauty and the craftsmanship that has gone into making those markers.
Tell me about it. Maybe pick one or two. Tell me about them.
Well, I can tell you about that you're going to find something beautiful in just about every cemetery in Utah. And part of the reason for that is that when the pioneers who settled this region came, they planned on staying from the beginning. They weren't here just, to work in the mines for a while and move along, but they came to stay. And as a result, from very early on, they were creating beautiful grave markers, most often in styles that were then current in the maker's former home. So there's a lot of British-inspired and Scandinavian-inspired markers throughout the state that are all hand-chiseled out of typically local stone, you know, with a hammer and a chisel, and each one handcrafted.
Hmm. What were, in their minds, what were these supposed to mean? Going, they knew these would be there for years and decades. What were these meant to mean?
Well, I think their primary purpose really was to memorialize a life, you know, to help us remember an individual and their contributions and their life. Lives were precious, and, you know, people often didn't live very long, and if you made it past childhood 150 years ago, that was really a wonderful thing. And, you know, I think they function really the same way they do for us today, to honor the person who's passed on.
When you go out into to graveyards, what's the feeling you have? What are the emotions? What are you thinking?
Oh, it's just amazing to me to see how many people have gone before, how many people have contributed to the society that we have today. And you can see many of those specific contributions just by the way the grave markers memorialize individuals. You can find out about their occupations. You can find out about local history, things that happened in the area, sometimes disasters that resulted in deaths. There's so much information on those gravestones. I find it, wherever I go, it doesn't matter, you know, whether I'm traveling domestically or even internationally, I make it a point to stop at cemeteries because there is so much to learn. You know, you can find out what the local geology is like by the stones that they have used to inscribe. It's a great place to get a feeling for an area, to understand what people did with their lives and also what they care about and what they believed in. Cemeteries, of course, are filled with iconography that represents religious beliefs and concerns. So it's a great one-stop shopping to get a feeling for a community.
Well, we are out of time, and of course, I'm sure many of us will be out in the graveyard remembering those who've gone before, and perhaps look for those very artistic gravestones or interesting gravestones apart from your family member. We've been joined in this last segment of the program by Carol Edison, folklorist in Salt Lake City. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Chris Tyrrell, CEO of Aptime, and with the Billion Graves Project, again, that website, Mr. Tyrrell, billiongravesproject.org?
It's just billiongraves.com.
Billiongraves.com. And you can help out with the genealogy by just taking photographs of those grave stones while you're out and about. Billiongraves.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up on Monday in the Access Utah slot, of course, it's Memorial Day, and we won't have an Access Utah program, but we have a backstory program. It's a history program, history series, and this is a fit for Memorial Day. Monumental Disagreements takes a look at how and what Americans have memorialized and the debates that have surrounded many of our most popular monuments. That's coming up on Monday. Thanks for joining us today.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.